and welcome to Literary Loitering. We're the Geek Show show that's kind of about literary, but mostly all about the loitering.
And not about video games at all.
No, definitely not about video games.
Yes.
Definitely not massive 2.5 hour long talks about video games.
No.
When all I want to do is record a show.
No. Just
hypothetically, I'm just saying.
Yes. Anyway, enough about that.
So who have we got in the studio today?
We've got me, Rob.
And we've got me, Owen.
We've got me, Andrew. And we have a special guest star.
And me, Rob. I decided to stop writing things on the actual whiteboard and sail them instead.
Yes, saying is good. You have a mouth.
More productive that way, I think.
Yes. Right, okay. We're going to get right into things. What have we got in the news this week, guys?
Well, shall we get the excrement out the way first?
Yes. Let's wipe it off.
So, the big happy news is there's going to be a 50 Shades of Grey sequel. Yes. But this time from the perspective of Christian Grey.
Hang on, what?
I don't know. I don't care.
Because that's a story we want.
So,
but it's a story we need.
Exactly.
So, basically, a book about S&M told for about a woman's...
Yeah.
A woman's journey into the world of S&M at the hands of a billionaire, apparently, is now being told from the perspective of the billionaire who probably hasn't suffered a day in his life.
Yeah. I think it's being slated as a prequel.
A prequel?
I think so, yeah.
About how he got kinky.
Yeah.
About how he got kinky, yes.
When we say that, no one cares about the story.
Hang on, it concerns
me from the story perspective, though, because there's bits in it which are very misogynistic, and it suggests that the woman, I don't know what she's called, I've never read it or watched it, is basically a sex slave.
Yeah.
That's basically what she is.
So, spinning it around and saying why this person needs a sex slave, I don't think it's going to be quite as romanticised as the original books are. It's just going to be kind of... I mean, if the... Yeah, it's E.L. James.
Yeah.
If she actually could string together two words,
E.L. James.
yeah. But it could be quite offensive, frankly.
Yeah. Well,
thinking of it logistically rather than it's 50 Shades of Grey, go on, but die in hell. You know, they usually do on this show.
If 50 Shades of Grey, please go die in hell.
Now I want this book to be written. It'd be massively offensive and like. E.L. James be banned from ever writing another book ever again.
No,
she should stick to Amazon
product
descriptions.
That doesn't work.
But it might this time.
No,
Rob.
It won't, because it didn't happen to J.K. Rowling with the casual racism. Sorry, vacancy. seriously, that.
What?
But J.K. Rowling got slammed by loads of people for just the racist overtones.
But don't you understand, Rob? She had her privacy invaded by all those journalists. She's allowed to be racist. She's suffered for her art. Poor lamb.
Yes.
Poor
girl.
I'm
sorry. I'm sure if I had the money that she had, I could hire some bloody security guards. You know, some actual security. Maybe actually have some actual security on my phone. I'm sure that's a thing. But anyway, enough of J.K. Rowling. Back to E.L. James, who incites even more rage.
Yeah, that's what worries me, you know.
You're suggesting this is a prequel?
Yes. I think it might be a prequel, yes. I've read somewhere.
Is there a resolution to it?
I don't know.
Is it just... Christian Grey and some anonymous girl have kinky sex.
I mean, I wonder if it
three
would be
times.
Kind of...
Well, three books.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if it'd be kind of be like his introduction into that kind of world.
So, are we talking when he was in boarding school? Or, you know, maybe when he was in the church choir? Is this what we're talking... Is this where his introduction came from?
No, Daddy,
when he was a naughty boy and had to get spanked.
Yes. Thank you, sir. May I have another?
No, no, not like that. Feel free to cut that out if you want.
I may have to. I may just bleep one word of it.
Okay.
I think the thank you, sir, may I have another is the more appropriate one. So, yeah.
What's wrong with what I said?
There is. Mine was from National Lampoon's. Yours was just wrong.
I'm keeping in theme with the offensive nature of Fifty Shades of Grey. I'm keeping it on topic.
Fifty Shades of Grey isn't offensive unless you actually want good writing, in which case it's a crime against humanity.
Yeah, I think we're actually just going to have to bleep out the word Fifty Shades of Grey.
It's a long beep.
But it's a necessary beep. Yeah.
Could we just bleep out key sections so it'd be 50 bleep of bleep?
Just bleep bleep James.
No, 50 bleep of bleep by E.L. Bleep. Okay. E.L. Bleep.
I'm clearly in the children's corner here, so...
yes.
Next story or...
Next story. Do we have a children's story? No, we don't.
No, we don't. But we do have a story about Jane Austen's nephew's grandson, who apparently wrote a book back in 1931, and it's apparently back in print after 80 years.
Was there Jane Austen's nephew's grandson?
Was there a demand for it to be back in print?
Of course.
What's this book called, and who is this author?
Lois Austen Lee's The Incredible Crime.
Wow.
Which is apparently a crime novel with kind of comedy elements, ending up university life.
Yeah, I'm not seeing why that university life now in the 30s has changed quite.
Yes, it has.
Significantly. I know there's the old looking back on it, how it used to be, but...
It's not quite cricket anymore, is it?
It's looking back at things with the separation of time. You can be a bit more witty about it.
Well, 1930s university life.
But looking back on it from the time, it's probably going to be a bit more mean.
1930s university life, you're talking about after the First World War and before the Second World War.
Lots of what-ho.
Yes. Lots of Charlestons.
And British spirit.
But... Jane Austen's nephew's grandson. I mean, yeah, kudos for him for his family, but is that not just clutching at straws?
Jane Austen's nephew's grandson. So your granddad was the nephew of Jane Austen.
He was beating,
but that basically makes you nothing in particular.
He was beating reality TV stars to the punch by a good 80 years, so you got to say bravo to his... You know, cojones there.
Well, is there like a 1930s version of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here?
I don't know, but he'd be on it.
In Darkest Africa.
Given that link, that linkage.
How offensive is it the fact that they called it Darkest Africa?
Sounds super quite offensive.
Maybe the light bulb popped. And they didn't know what to do.
They had candles.
Nah. They didn't.
Okay.
That's just what they want you to believe, Rob.
Right. Okay. So this book is finally in print again. But I'll be honest, they should have just gone with the name. They didn't have to introduce it as Jane Austen's nephew's grand...
Is that what they put on the cover?
Son, daughter, whatever it is.
Yeah. From Jane Austen's
it's a very big book just for that one cover page.
Yeah, but I don't think they'd sell it off his name alone, to be honest.
And it's the grandson of the nephew of Jane Austen. That's like, you know...
It's not even a direct descendant.
Oh, wait, no, my bad. Granddaughter.
Granddaughter.
Because her name is Lois.
Yeah, granddaughter of the nephew of Jane Austen.
This whole 6 degrees of separation thing, used as a means to sell a book. Yeah. It's like saying
the next martial arts action hero, you know...
the third cousin is
the best friend of the cousin of the nephew of...
Of that guy who met Bruce Lee one time.
Yeah. It's basically that.
Oh. But it's like, you're not even descended.
And his name is Jackie Chun.
That actually exists, though.
I know.
It's called Jackie Sploitation. It's a real thing.
Oh, yeah, just like Bruce Sploitation.
Yep.
Yeah. 70s.
Oh, you remember that movie, They Still Call Me Bruce?
I don't think I do, no.
Is a Bruce Sploitation movie. It's about some Chinese guy who things just keep happening to him because everyone thinks he's Bruce Lee.
You seen that story in the news a while ago about that Afghan guy who was a double for Bruce Lee?
Yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah.
That's why he's not done anything.
It kind of sounds like For the Life of Brian. It's like everything happens to him because everybody thinks he's Jesus.
He's the Messiah.
Yeah.
No, not that he's Jesus, he's the Messiah.
Yes.
But he's not the Messiah. He's just a very naughty boy.
Oh. Yes. He beat you to it.
I was hoping that nobody would say that.
Shall we move on to another?
Just before we go, basically the whole point why I brought this story to us is that unfortunately I don't think we'll be seeing like adaptations of one of her other novels, because her like second best mystery novel is the Gobblecock Mystery.
What did The Guardian have to say about this?
That it might be a little hard for 21st century publishers to swallow.
Guardian's being very transgressive, aren't they? Then.
Oh, just there's too many jokes that can't be aired.
I think we have an episode title.
Well, I think Guardian just nailed it. You know, they knocked it out of the park with that pun.
They did.
Well done, The Guardian.
So yes, anyway, yes. Yeah, I don't think her second novel is going to see the light of day.
No.
As a film or animation, maybe as a video game.
not in mainstream publications.
No.
Maybe you have to go to special shops and get a brown paper bag and wear a Mac to get it. But not from Waterstones or something like that.
Or have it delivered to their door by specialist distributors.
Yeah, we'll leave it there.
Yes. Anyway,
let's move very swiftly on to the next story, which is not about Bear Grylls, because it's about Bear Grylls' grandfather.
Are we on another one of these ancestral stories?
Yes, yes we are. So this is about Ted Grylls. best name ever.
What was his job?
His job in World War II was to secretly hunt down Nazi scientists.
Ted Grylls, Nazi scientist.
Yes, he was a target as well.
This guy is in glorious bystanders, him on his own.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, it's cool. It's quite an interesting story. It's a nice link that just kind of say, my father was hunted bad guys.
Yeah, but can you imagine? Isn't that like a 1950s comic book character, Ted Grylls, Nazi hunter?
Yeah, granddad always used to have the weirdest stories, and he'd bring out scalps of some things. I don't know what was going on. Granddad was weird.
Yes.
Granddad once ate a man's leg.
No, he never. Ted Grylls won't do that.
Ted Grylls?
Ted Grylls won't do that.
Cuss he would.
No, he wouldn't. He's got class.
At the very least, he wouldn't eat it raw.
No, he wouldn't eat it raw, and he'd basically offer him his own leg in return.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's not right to eat your own leg.
No.
What have I stepped into?
Are you sure you want to say that when we're talking about legs?
It's a really good question. I mean, considering I've been wondering that question, I've been wondering that for a long time.
Isn't this a book show?
Yes, it is.
Apparently.
Yes, it is. So Ted Grylls was hunting Nazi scientists, was it?
Yes.
So is this a story about him by Bear Grylls or what? What is this?
No, just that apparently he found a bunch of like letters and junk in an attic upstairs. I'm not even sure why this is in book news, but I don't care because it's cool.
Possibly because he's going to be collating them all into a novel magazine type thing, and then releasing them to the public so the public can pay good money to read about the adventures of Bear Grylls' grandfather.
Was Bear Grylls like the old, is the SAS guy?
No, that's Andy McNab. Bear Grylls is the one.
Bear Grylls does that, survival, island thing and survival. Yeah. Wild wilderness survival.
Although apparently Bear Grylls did used to be in the SAS.
Oh, yeah, he did, that's right.
I thought I heard that, yeah.
He does all sorts of wilderness survival now and how to wipe with thistles and stuff like that.
The best way to get moisture.
From the back to the front.
Yeah. One of the ones I remember most of all is the best way to get moisture out of elephant dung.
Okay, I found why it's book news. Apparently Bear Grylls is going to be using this story like as the basis for his first novel called Ghost Flight.
Oh, he sounds like he's taking it in a very serious... Ghost Flight is a very... what's he called? The guy who does all the game adaptations? I can't think of his name now.
It's a very cheesy name. Yeah, what's he called?
Tom Clancy. It's very Tom Clancy.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
what
it's sounding.
Yeah. It makes more sense now why it's in book news. And, you know, if his dad was hunting Nazi scientists, then... his granddad was hunting Nazi scientists, then, you know... Great, fantastic.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it just means that in the next series of The Island, they'll probably be taking a trip to Brazil.
Yeah. I'm just curious, how many Nazi scientists were left after the Americans took them all? Because wasn't that the thing?
Ooh. This isn't Pokemon.
He went there. He went there. Yeah, I forgot they were all on the Manhattan Project, weren't they?
And they were responsible for getting Man on the Moon. Let's not forget that as well.
Yes, if you believe.
Recording studio in Wisconsin.
Yes. Anyway, what else have we got in the news?
Okay, apparently the author of Cloud Atlas, David Mitchell, has compared young adult novels like Harry Potter and Twilight to cocaine.
When you say David Mitchell, are we talking about David Mitchell?
No, not that David Mitchell.
No, not that one.
I get confused when they say, oh, the author of Cloud Atlas, David Mitchell, and all I've got is a picture of my head of some smarmy git.
this TV comedian?
Yeah.
I like him.
I like him as well, but he can't
be
quite
not the same
smarmy.
Person.
I know they're not the same person.
It's like you're not RoboCop.
I know, nor are my Roblox.
No. No,
which is
not.
A game I just found on the internet today that surprisingly has a similar name to me.
But that's a curious conclusion to make, comparing young adult novels to cocaine. It's a big leap.
Yeah, I think not quite. His general theory is that it gets kids hooked on reading, and it's got like a gateway to the more hardcore stuff.
It's just using the word, using
the more
the
hardcore
term.
Stuff being like 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah. using cocaine as an analogy, though, it kind of suggests like hardcore novels, like, I don't know, like magic mushrooms and LSD. what this drug analogy does not work for him whatsoever, you know. He's just trying to get headlines.
I think it does work. You never saw the cues for Harry Potter.
I did.
You never saw the screams for Harry Potter.
Yes, I did.
Those cues.
Oh God, your niece.
No, I've seen them though. I know.
No. You weren't in the cues for Harry Potter.
You're a secret Harry Potter fan.
No, my niece.
No.
My niece is a Harry Potter fan.
Not taking that. Not accepting that. You are the secret Harry Potter fan. You're totally team Ron.
No.
Yeah.
Shut up, Team Ginny.
What the hell's that?
See?
What's a Ginny?
I don't know.
Ron's
sister.
Oh my God, you are both such total Hufflepuffs.
shut up, you Ravenclaw.
Those were the smart ones.
I don't know what's going on.
What are these words?
You started this.
It's all gibberish to me. I don't know what this is.
Anyway, when he's comparing them to cocaine, I kind of get his point, because if you were in any of those queues for the Harry Potter books and you saw the crazed, demented looks of the children and just the way they kept gabbling on about the latest Harry Potter book to their parents, it was like, when addicts have severe withdrawal symptoms? And they start just going off on one and hallucinating and everything like that. It was like that.
Oh, it's the Harry Potter shakes.
Yes.
What? <That's> just...
Seriously. You think I'm joking, but I'm not.
I think you're just being dramatic.
Nope.
Okay.
Let's put it this way. For stuff like a series of unfortunate events... And, even Hell, The Lion, The Witch in the Wardrobe and stuff like that, they never had that amount of fanaticism, and it's that fanaticism. Twilight, all the teenage girls with Twilight when the movie came out, and they're standing there with, what's-his-face, Robert Pattinson, going, I love you, Robert Pattinson.
Our Pats. If you're going to take the mick out of him, at least get it right.
Pats.
Our Pats.
Our Pats.
Yeah.
Okay, but... When they're like, he looks at them. He looks at them and gives them his supposedly dreamy look, which makes him look kind of, constipated.
He hated that movie. Those movies.
Yeah,
he's got
as well. He should.
He's got a record in saying he hates every one of them.
Yeah. They basically ruined his life. He can't go anywhere without being swamped by.
Whenever I tweet something about a film that Robert Pattinson's in, when I was using Twitter more actively, they were always the most retweeted and favorited things.
Yeah.
Even if it was insulting him, it was like, 30 retweets. What? But why? I don't think it's fanaticism for the book.
No.
Like, it's fanaticism for the story, and I don't think fanaticism for a story translates into fanaticism for books.
No, it doesn't.
It needs that second sort of follow-on for that.
Yeah,
and
I think that is where he is wrong, that I've known lots of people who have grown up being like obsessed with Harry Potter, but they haven't got on to like become big readers. It's just that one series.
No, didn't have that second series to sort of latch on to.
That's where I think he's wrong. I think he's right when he says that certain books can be like cocaine, can be addictive like cocaine and cause a degree of fanaticism. But I don't think it extends to other books. I don't think it's getting loads of kids reading. It's getting loads of kids reading that particular book or that particular series of books, but that's it.
Maybe that particular genre.
No, well, even that's...
Is that too...
Well, you know, there's a percentage that will go on to read, but the mass of it...
Yeah, is just literally that and that's all.
Mass hysteria, that's...
Yeah. Dogs and cats living together.
That's quite normal now, though.
Yeah, I know. Anyway,
what has the world come to?
What's next on the news?
Can I...
Yes, let's head over to Owen.
Yes, I have some Booker Prize, Man Booker Prize. Marina Warner, an international judge for the Man Booker Prize, has spoken out against the lack of world literature in English and has called for more book translations into the English language.
Good.
Saying that... point to a recent report which found that just 3% of books published in the UK are translations, which she has pegged as an embarrassing figure.
That is embarrassing.
That is shocking.
It is, yeah.
It's the white man syndrome, you know, that only white English written books are important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not true. No. I mean, for one, I'm a massive champion of Haruki Murakami.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's one of that 3%.
Yeah.
You know.
Sorry, you were going to say?
Nothing.
I was the one that was going to say.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, literature has always been a great way to kind of explore new ideas and put forward new views. But if you only stay in your own comfort zone, then you're kind of losing the point. She's asking for more books from like India, China, and the Arab world.
Not just India, China, Arab world.
The
world over. I think the Eastern books, books from Africa, books from South America. You know, books from, you know, what about books from having more Russian books over here?
Yeah.
You know, see, it becomes this cultural thing. If all you're exposed to is the culture of your own country, then you become very, very xenophobic. It's exactly what happened to America.
To use the film analogy with people go to see subtitled movies.
Yeah.
It says, I'm not going to see a movie. It's got subtitles. I don't go there to read.
Yeah,
it transfers into that sort of laziness, you know, of what you experience and what you consume.
Unfortunately, I kind of got to put my hand up. So I used to be like that. I'm not like that anymore.
Yeah, but the thing is,
you got better. Yeah.
You got better.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
You put in that sensory deprivation tank and you sweat it out.
You can say I used to be like that, but thankfully I'm not like that anymore.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a tank, man. It does it does great things.
Yeah, but it is very much. I mean, you've seen. Take America. Let's take the US, for example, right? The US has a higher proportion of... the US publishing market is dominated mainly by US authors.
Self-help books is like massive thing.
No, I mean, just their fiction.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Their fiction market is dominated primarily by US authors. And by fiction, I mean, you know, straightforward fiction, fantasy, science fiction. It's mainly US authors that dominate there.
Yeah.
If you're of the level of, say, Pratchett or someone like that, then you can basically cut straight into that market. But a lot of them are American authors. You need to be Rowling, Pratchett, that sort of thing, right? But what happens then is you have a very one-sided perspective of that, you know, of fiction and fantasy and science fiction.
Yeah.
And it's very, very kind of Americanized.
Mm.
It's like the difference between, say, an American cop show and a British cop show. A British cop show couldn't really work in America. It wouldn't really sell well in America. You couldn't get them watching The Bill in the same way that we watch Law and Order.
No, that's true.
For example, because the first thing that the American audience is going to say is, "Well, where are the guns?"
Yeah.
Well, I think the easiest thing to look at Life on Mars and how they tried to make that into an American version and that just failed horribly.
There's Broadchurch as well. I mean, I don't know if that came
out. Oh, yes,
out,
I've heard.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'd be interested in that.
Which is a weird thing because, you know, you have little pockets of like Scandinavian literature.
Yeah.
has rose exponentially over the past...
Oh, Stieg Larsson stuff.
Well, since the sort of... I can't remember what I called it now. Sort of the Norwegian wave, whatever you want to call it.
Well, there was
stuff like
all that Norwegian noir stuff.
That's the
over.
Word I was thinking of.
Yeah, but then that's also like one specific type of Norwegian noir gets popular. And so they think all Norwegian noir must be like that.
But the fact that that exists and that can grow, the fact that it's just saying no to everything else is... Yeah. Incredibly shallow.
There's some amazing, amazing authors, poets, you name it, out there. I found it, I was really surprised when I found out that Bangladesh has actually had two people who won the Nobel Prize for Literature.
Mm.
Two have won it from Bangladesh. One of them was Rabindranath Tagore. And the other one was a guy called Kazi Nazrul Islam. And both of them won the Nobel Prize for Literature. That's like the highest award anyone can get for literature. There is nothing bigger than that.
But it's the UKIP syndrome, isn't it? You know, English books for English people.
You try finding any of their work translated into English, it's impossible.
That's true.
Of course it is.
You know, and this is the highest global prize for literature.
At the same time, spinning the perspective around, what about the other way? Do other countries...
Yes.
Like, international countries take an English literature?
Yeah. Yes.
Let's think,
a hell of a lot. How many languages do you think Harry Potter was translated into?
I don't use Harry Potter as an example, of course. That's a terrible example.
Lord of the Rings.
Still a bad example. Just general literature.
Okay, Arthur C. Clarke books. Yeah, translated into multiple languages. I know when we were at this comics convention as part of the Geek Show over the weekend, just Dylan Horrocks's graphic novel, how many languages that had been translated into.
I don't know.
Finnish, German, Spanish, you know, you name it.
Hmm.
Hmm.
And he's from New Zealand.
Hmm, he was a Kiwi, aye.
You know, this is the thing. It gets, from our side, stuff that is produced in English gets exported into other languages on a regular basis. It's just the reciprocation isn't there. We don't import books from other authors because we have this misguided belief that we have loads and loads of talented authors in this country who are just waiting and champing at the bit to release their stories into the wild. And then we find out that, sadly, we're just a nation filled with E.L. James. Stephanie Meyer.
Island mentality, isn't it?
I was kind of going to use James as an example. I mean, books like that, they sold everywhere. They became so popular everywhere else, and yet... we're not willing to kind of accept other ideas.
We're doing what Japan culturally was doing in the 18th century.
Yes, we are. The irony is, right, E.L. James, the French basically didn't care for her book.
Too tame.
They just
call
it a light romantic comedy or something.
No. The French basically took one look at 50 Shades of Grey and said, why the hell should we read this? We had the Marquis de Sade.
That is so true.
We had the guy who invented S&M.
No, seriously, they gave it a 12A because they thought it was a bit of light fluff.
Yeah, they did.
Well, that equivalent.
Yes. That's actually no word of a lie. They thought it was the kind of book they'd give to their
grandmothers as presents.
They had in their prison the guy who wrote The Story of Awe. And various other things. The guy who basically created S&M in the first place and called it S&M, they had him in prison. You know, they have his book, all of his works. You know, they keep them for posterity. What the hell do they want with something like 50 Shades of Grey?
that's true.
Okay, next story. We're kind of stuck on that one for a while.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think we have to break the sad news to the nation. The Queen is dead.
No, she isn't.
No, she is not. This is the story that a BBC journalist on Twitter mistakenly tweeted that the Queen had died.
And it broke global news.
Yeah, might have just as made, well it would.
Like the Queen at his local, you know, a cross-dressing club. You don't know.
Can you imagine the panic inside, like, CNN and MSNBC and Bloomberg and Sky and the rest of them? They've seen one tweet going, the Queen is dead, and all of a sudden news editors the world over are having collective apoplexies. Why didn't we know about this?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Twitter's like a major source of news nowadays.
Yeah.
So that could have happened just the world over, every TV station.
I wonder
station.
How many journalists had heart attacks.
Yeah. For me, just the whole idea of it, I don't know what's worse, the fact that this happened or the fact that America would be more upset about it, whereas here we'd be like, so do we get Charles or William?
No, we don't want Charles. Charles has had his time. Charles has had his chance. We need to go straight to William.
The royalists are dying out, but there's still a lot of them.
I think in America it's like, because our royal family is kind of this whimsy faraway thing, and for us it's just like, to live with them.
No. You've got to look at it like this. This comes back to that previous story we were talking about, the reciprocation thing, right? They gave us Dallas and Dynasty. We gave them the royal family. And I don't mean the TV show. I mean, they basically watch our royal family like it was some kind of weekly soap opera.
So it's basically like the TV equivalent of warfare then.
Yeah, basically.
They keep just dropping awful things on each other.
No. They've been watching our royal family since, they basically decided, oh, we don't want anything to do with the royals. Yeah. And then like 3 weeks later said, we actually kind of miss royalty now. That's so much for your civil war. 2% tax rise, indeed. That's what they get now. That's their version of soap operas.
I think it's easier to love the royal family when they don't have any power over your country. You don't have to give them the money to like support their lifestyles.
Yes, this is true. So, yeah. Still a lot of royalists about. But I don't think many of them want Charles on the throne.
No. There do seem to kind of be more royalists in America than there are, on percentage, than there are here.
Do you know what it is? It's because they're scared of Canada.
Canada, that great enemy.
It's because Canada are almost entirely royalist, and America is scared of Canada descending on them with fire and brimstone and Mounties, if they diss the Queen.
Canadians are just nice.
Yeah, except when it comes to defense of the Queen.
Oh, no. Canadians are like Americans, but nice.
Yeah.
Except when it comes to defence of the Queen.
And hockey.
Yeah, and hockey, yeah.
Oh, that's where they get all the rage out.
Yeah.
Yes.
In the hock. I gave up on that sentence halfway there.
In the rink. But yeah.
Yes.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
America is scared of Canada.
Yeah, they live in fear of their maple syrupy doom.
Yes, they live in fear of. They try their best not to make jokes about the royal family. Even the comedians in America are very careful not to take the Mickey out of the royals.
Really?
I think that just makes it more
really
weird.
There's
not that many people in America who would find it funny that they're making fun of our royal family.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, one of the comedian's favourite targets is Prince Andrew.
Yeah, but that's over here.
Oh, okay, that's...
Yeah.
So it's like,
because, he's our prince. We find it funny to make fun of him.
That's what it's like. They're our family. We'll take the piss off, but if you will take the mick out of them. But if you... Oh...
Yeah.
We'll go after you.
It just goes to show one thing. England is a hillbilly nation. There is no one we'd rather fight than each other, but if somebody else tries getting in on our family, we're just like this well-oiled machine of doom.
That is true.
All of us just band together.
We're just terrible hypocrites. But it is so true.
Speak for yourself, man.
There's nothing wrong with hippos.
I never said I wasn't a hypocrite.
I can't stand the royals and I make no bones of that.
Well, that's fair enough.
But the thing is, it's fine. If you went to Canadian and you said, I hate
Canada.
Canadian. I said, if you went to a Canadian.
All right, just sound like you just said, if you went to Canada.
No.
It's not like 100%, Rob. Don't be daft. Of course it's not.
What?
100% of Canadians love the royals. No, don't be daft.
No, it's probably about 95%.
Nah.
What?
When William and Kate went over there, there was one demonstration about them in the entire country, and that involved about 50 people. out of everybody.
Yeah, but every one person doesn't represent one person in those sorts of things, does it?
In this case, probably it did.
Nah, I disagree. Disagree on that. But anyhow, moving
there
on.
There were more protests in Australia about the Royals than there were in Canada. And the Canadians have said for like the last 50 years, if England doesn't want the royal family, they always have a home in Canada.
That's kind of true.
Canada are very, very proud of the fact that they have a queen and a royal family.
Mm.
Well, it's not so much their queen, more kind of... It's still our queen, but it's just a remnant
No. They're actually really, really proud. Really proud. Isn't we're talking like a
shall
American
we move on
military
to the next
type
news
proud.
Story?
Yeah. Isn't this a book show?
Yes, it is.
Owen, you have more news, maybe.
No, I don't.
No,
are we done with the news?
I've still. Should I say one thing to last?
No, go for it.
Okay, we're going to do the James Bond thing.
Are we?
Yeah.
Are we?
Dun 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 dun.
Let's go on, everyone get the tuxedos out.
Are we all going to? Are we all going to speak like this?
You okay,
Michael
Rob?
Caine.
I don't know.
Do you need to go to the toilet? Are you okay?
No. I don't know what's going on anymore. What is the James Bond
okay,
thing?
So Anthony Horowitz, who's been kind of continuing the James Bond books, he's going to write a new one called Trigger Mortis.
Oh, God.
What?
Yeah. And even better than that, it's going to feature the return of classic Bond character Pussy Galore.
I must be dreaming.
Yeah. That doesn't work, does it? That name doesn't really stand up to modern, you know.
I don't think it stood up to standards then.
No.
That was the reason why Sean Connery said, I must be dreaming.
It could scrape by then. Now, nowhere.
That's it. We're no longer in the Sean Connery era.
No. I think using the word, using the name Pussy Galore, I think that ended during the 80s when Roger Moore did Octopussy.
Oh, God, yes.
Well, I think it's more about what that character represents than what the character's called.
Yeah.
Because it was a female equal.
That's true. That was quite forward thinking.
It was on a Blackman played Pussy Galore, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, she
famously,
did.
Famously, yeah. But I think that's what should be reported on, not the fact that some dumb name has been reused, but
the fact that it's a character who's being resurrected.
Oh, yeah. That makes it...
Oh, no, but that's general press
but
consensus.
That's just one of the characters, isn't it? It's not all of them.
Is there anyone else? I mean, with...
No, that's the only character who is coming back.
Really?
Oh, is that the only...
There's just a list of five characters who maybe should make a comeback.
Oh, who's this?
So I'll run through the list.
Is Jaws by any chance one of them?
No, actually, supposedly
really?
Jaws is not on the list.
Why not Jaws? I love Jaws. I thought Jaws was great.
But I kind of agree, because I feel like... If you brought Jaws back, you couldn't really do anything else with him.
No. He bit a shark to death.
He did.
Exactly. I'm sorry.
That
Jaws,
is true.
And that's a reason to bring him back.
Yes.
Jaws has peaked. There's like nothing else better you could do. Okay, so first of all,
he even saved James Bond in in that Moonraker movie.
Yeah, where he fell in love with that lass with braces.
Yeah, and the
anyhow.
Yes, anyway. First on the list, Rob, is Rosa Clare, but from Russia with Love.
Okay,
who I think she'd be cool to bring back because she was like the head female assassin of Spectre.
Yeah. Yes,
so she could even come back like in the upcoming film. Then up was Tracy Bond from On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Well, she died.
Yeah. So
she couldn't come back as a zombie?
I assume they could bring her back like,
maybe as a
in the films
I don't know,
they're doing now because they're right. Reboot.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, have they got into a new turn?
Because
it was her
point
her,
of his life.
Her death was a major driving force for him, wasn't it?
It was one of the best Bond films by the worst actor, so it kind of levels out to be okay.
Which is kind of like why I would like to see that done again, with a better Bond.
I just like the fact that On Her Majesty's Secret Service opens with who was it who played it? Was it
Lazenby?
George Lazenby. I think it was the first line he says in the movie is, "This never happened to the other fella."
Yeah, my favorite piece of trivia about the whole thing is that Lazenby had never acted before, but he wanted to be James Bond. Yeah.
He's just a model.
Yeah,
there was a good reason he never acted before.
It's basically what Robbie Williams is suffering from right now and has been for the last 15 years.
He really wanted to be a singer.
He just wants to be James Bond. He doesn't care about the singing. All he wants to be is James Bond.
Yes.
Even when he was with Take That, that's all he wanted to be was James Bond.
Have I missed the conversation here? It feels like I've missed the conversation.
Probably.
Then we have kind of a pretty obvious one is Odd Job.
Okay.
Oh, God, yes.
So I think like he's one of the most popular.
Seriously, who throws a shoe?
It's
a reference.
Okay, fair enough.
Austin Powers.
Then there's two kind of odder ones. One is Elliot Carver from Tomorrow Never Dies.
Elliot Carver?
Yeah, like Jonathan Pryce played him. It's like the evil medium.
Why Elliot Carver?
Which, I know, at first, I was a bit skeptical, but they kind of justified it by thinking it could work with like all the media.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, they've done that already.
Yeah, but they could do it better.
Oh, God.
Tomorrow Never Dies is awful.
Yeah, I know.
And then the final one, which I don't understand at all and can no way justify, Senior Honor Top from GoldenEye.
Okay.
The Famke Janssen who kills people with her legs.
Didn't really fit in with modern Bond. But then again, the name rigor mortis doesn't scream modern Bond. It screams 80s.
No, trigger mortis.
Even so. It screams.
Because come on, Rob, rigor mortis would be ridiculous.
My bad. But 80s Bond, that'd fit in with.
Yeah.
That sort of dumb pun.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's just, you could fit in books like that.
Well then.
And then we also have five Bond characters who definitely shouldn't come back.
Oh.
Which, first of all, I agree so much with Gustav Graves from Die Another Day.
Yes. Yes.
Toby Stevens playing a Korean man.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, that was kind of...
What was that Bond movie set in Japan? The one
he transmogrified and he gets thicker
next
eyebrows.
Next up on the list is just James Bond's yellow face from You Only Live Twice.
Thicker eyebrows, black hair, and yellow face. That's he's Japanese now.
Oh, no, you forget it. The eyes pulled back as well.
Oh, I did.
Just because it wasn't racist enough.
Oh, that was definitely a product of its time.
Yeah, what else?
Then we have, actually one we already mentioned, Dolly from Moonraker, who was Jaws' girlfriend.
Yes. Well, she didn't actually do anything, so I can agree with that.
Yes, Boris from GoldenEye. The Russian hacker guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I liked his medium of death.
And what's the last one?
And finally, Winton Kidd from Diamonds Are Forever.
Which one was he?
Wint and Kidd. They were like two assassins.
There
was lots of jokes as to the nature of their relationship.
Yeah, I liked them.
In the 21st century, don't really work.
It was kind of like two daytime TV kids show presenters kind of thought, we're sick of this, let's go and be hitmen.
You mean like Ant and Dec?
Yeah.
If they suddenly decided to,
that would have been quite weird.
It's like Ant and Dec meets Leon.
If you don't impose that on sort of narrative of your own,
see,
they're kind of
one of films like just a massive shootout between Ant and Dec and Dick and Dom.
But when you put a sort of narrative into that film, it works. It works.
Ant and Dec and Dick and Dom. It's just. Try saying that several times when you're drunk.
There's a tongue teaser for future mic checks. So.
Yes.
Is that us for the news? I think that's the news.
Yeah, that's the news.
I think that's the news. Well, we're going to dive straight into some books. We're going to start off with Andrew.
Books, really?
Yes, we have books to talk about.
The book show.
Yes, Andrew and his perfect armrest, also known as
An Ember in the Ashes.
So tell us, what is An Ember in the Ashes all about?
It is a young adult fantasy novel. It's set in this world where there are two kind of civilizations. One's called the Marshals and they have a big empire, and the other's called the Scholars and they do not have a big empire and are like slaves and junk. So the book follows two characters. There's Leia, who is a slave girl trying to find out what happened to her kidnapped brother.
Isn't Return of the Jedi.
And the second one is Elias, who is a trainee soldier, does stuff. I didn't like this book. So I think, first thing, do you remember last week we talked about the seven deadly sins of world building?
Yes.
Yeah.
This hits like a good solid four or five of them. So I think,
right in the face, is it?
Yeah, as like you might have guessed, it definitely goes for the whole one-dimensional groups thing. So the Marshals, they like fighting and war. and because the scholars, they are smart. God. End of development.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, God.
And, of course, like building into that, they're also monolithic. So all the marshals like fighting. There's like no marshals like, you know, I'm not that big a fan of the whole fighting thing.
Maybe I'll just go bake a cake instead.
You should. You really should. And like, there's just, there's no infrastructure, no like day to day how this world
with
works.
Cake than we can with fighting. Does no one say that?
Probably someone's, but just like not in the book.
Oh, that's a shame.
Just like off to the side, just in between the pages. Then like
a footnote.
Then just kind of like a logical history of all the emperors have been like evil, crazy dictator people. And finally, magic that just is in no way explained how it affects the society. Like literally at the start of the book, everyone thinks all like magical creatures don't exist and stuff. But then partway through, it's real like gasp, they actually do exist. And everyone is kind of dully surprised. Like they go, oh, that's a bit of a shock. Right back to how things were then.
Magic exists.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And like they have these guys called augurs who can apparently see the future.
Augurs or augurs?
Augurs, whatever. I don't care.
Are you doing the Smaug Smaug thing again?
Probably.
Because that annoyed me, that whole thing about AU being pronounced ow. Like, well, no, it's not. I don't wander around going August and autumn.
Okay, augurs then. Okay, but yeah, they're augurs and they can see. Which is another thing that really annoys me, just any time there's anything, like with people who can predict the future or anything that's like you are destined to do, etc. It's like, surely that's taking away the very concept of free will.
Well, yeah.
And like, why should I care about anything that happens in the book? Because if the guy who can see the future says the protagonists are going to do their thing, then they're going to do their thing.
I actually think you're correct on that, because once you find out what the prophecy is, you might as well skip all the middle bits and go to the end of the story.
Yeah.
And just say, okay, so final. What's the final sentence? All right, okay, that's it. And then you can talk about it, because like, they've told you exactly what's going to happen. It was predicted. It was predetermined. In no way can they change it. Ooh.
But don't worry, because in this book, it's not just the plot that's horrible. It's also the characters.
Oh.
Okay, so we have the two main characters. First up is Elias, who's like the soldier guy who has literally no development. Like, at the start of the book, we're introduced, and he wants to escape from the Empire, because, like, he is apparently the one guy who doesn't like fighting. And by the end of the book, he is a guy who wants to escape the Empire.
It is sounding a lot like Star Wars.
It kind of is.
I mean, you have, like, a slave girl called Leia.
But worse, don't worry, it's worse than Star Wars.
And because it's about a brother.
Don't worry, guys, because Elias is also prophesied to one day rule the Empire.
He's a Jedi?
No. Yeah. He is the Jedi.
Did we miss something? They've even got the introduction of magic.
Yes.
Or the Force.
It kind of is stuff. But yeah, but like, it's so dumb. Because like I said, we're introduced to him. Like, he already doesn't like the Empire. Like, his whole story is having to go through this storyline. Like,
No. It is Star Wars. The marshals like fighting. They are the Empire.
Yes, they are the Empire.
The other ones are scholarly. They are the Jedi.
Yeah, because like, they're all peace and light and happiness and junk.
Samuel Jackson was not peace and light. Mace Windu was
supposed to be... Well, like, in general, they like peace and stuff.
Mace Windu was supposed to be a badass. When he got his arm cut off, he's not going to scream like a little girl and fall out the window. He's going to take one look at it and chop the guy's head off.
Hey, come on, Rob. We're not criticizing how terrible the prequels were. We're criticizing how terrible this book was. So, like I said, like he starts off not liking the Empire, and he goes through all these trials. Where it's like, oh, you're destined to be Empire, but you have to do all these horrible things, like kill people you love, endure great hardships. Like, there's no emotional depth through it, because, like, he already hates the Empire, so he's just doing stuff that makes him more hate the Empire.
Really?
Yeah, so it's like, it's literally no development.
Oh, God.
Plus, like, if he had started off, like, actually being a loyal member, but, like, realised throughout the course of the book that actually the Empire is terrible, that would be better character development, and it would, like, actually flesh out the Empire itself, because then you would get to see, like, maybe the better side of it, like, how people actually live their day-to-day lives. Anyway, then there's like the other protagonist, Leia, who she actually does go through some character development. She's like got this whole story arc about learning to be brave and strong and like not just weakly accept things. But she just takes so long to get to that point. It's like most of the book and most of that is just her whining about, oh, everything's so hard and sad and I miss my brother. Because her brother got kidnapped. Did I mention her brother got kidnapped? Because her brother got kidnapped.
All right. Okay.
And she mentions this literally at least once a chapter.
I was going to say, is this like her opening line to like anybody new she meets? My brother got kidnapped. My name's whatever.
Basically, yeah. And like, this is her brother who we have known for all of two chapters, but is apparently literally the greatest guy in the universe.
So she's got a brother complex.
She just such a brother complex.
Why do you have to make it weird?
Because I watch anime.
Well then.
Yes, okay.
But no, come on, she's not in love with her brother, though, no. She's either in love with the hunky member of the Resistance, Keenan, or maybe the dreamboat Elias.
Does he by any chance have a huge furry friend?
No, no, he does not have a Chewbacca.
Don't you dare. No.
The look on Owen's face was just looking at me going, don't you dare make any jokes about that.
It was unfortunate
that you phrased it that way.
Yes.
Anyway.
But yeah, like I was saying, this is a book. There's like the obligatory young adult love, like octagon. And just, I hate that bit, but that's the bit I can kind of accept because that is what the audience wants. So I guess that will appeal to people reading it.
Fantastic. Right, okay. I've got just enough time for one more. This one's going to be fairly quick, but I think
I could just rack on this book some more, because I have like another hour's worth of material about how bad it is.
We'll save it for the blooper reel. Because then you'll be allowed to swear and we can bleep it.
Oh, excellent.
This one is edited by Stephen H. Segal.
What? Wait, what?
I know.
Was he like, right, I'm tired of this.
It's not the real Steven Seagal, don't worry.
So
would have been hilarious.
I was going to say, I'm tired of this tough guy persona. I'm going to put an H in the middle between my name so somebody thinks it's someone else.
No, no.
So I imagine he does it like, with a pen and like the same ridiculous wavy kung fu motion.
No, no. The thing is, this is Geek Wisdom, The Sacred Teachings of Nerd Culture, edited by Stephen H. Segal. On the back it says, I have been and always shall be your friend. With great power comes great responsibility. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. First rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club. Do not meddle in the affairs of wizards, for they are subtle and quick to anger. Blah, 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 blah. And other famous quotes from
my favourite will always be that first quote. I have been and always shall be your friend.
Anyway, Ray, when someone asks you if you are a god, you say yes.
Okay.
Pearls of Wisdom. To live by.
Yes.
And that is the whole point of Geek Wisdom. What they've done, they've basically taken a bunch of quotes and related them. And they've got like little essays from people about how they relate to specific things. The very first section, the very first chapter begins with, my name is Inigo Montoya. And it's about wisdom, about the self. So knowing who you are being the first thing about knowing yourself, and the after that it's with great power comes great responsibility, and an explanation about why Uncle Ben, poor Uncle Ben, made that statement to Peter before he died and died and died and died and died,
died
and died again.
And died once.
Yeah, and then you got young Frankenstein, Dr. Frederick Frankenstein, going, destiny, destiny, no escaping that for me. You know, moving on to I'm not finished. The light that burns twice as bright burns half as long, and you have burned so very, very brightly, Roy. That's Dr. Eldon Tyrrell from Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah, talking to...
You know, and then, you know, Alexander Dane from Galaxy Quest going, by Grabthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, you shall be avenged. from Galaxy Quest.
Okay.
So, yes. It's an unusual little book. I'm not sure I agree with all of the life philosophies that are in this, because some of them are common sense and some of them are a little bit dumb.
And also some of them are talking about fictional things said by characters just to sound cool.
Yes. The sentiment behind this is just basically, you know, you can be a geek, but you don't have to be a geek, effectively. And I kind of understand what they're trying to say, but I think that this is effectively like a geek self-help book in order to help you be more normal. And I'm of the opinion that, no, you should go the other way. You should basically become more geek and more different, because the world loves diversity. Diversity is what makes the world go round.
You don't need to conform to what people think is normal. Yes, because everybody needs something to hate.
Yeah. But, like I said, there are some good common sense stuff. There's some good common sense stuff in here. You know, things about looking after yourself and, you know, about being healthy, about, you know, just basically knowing what the difference between right and wrong. You know, basic things like that. It's surprising just how many people don't actually understand that last one, the difference between right and wrong, you know, because it tends to be a very, very gray area for some people.
I've just quickly opened it up, and the first thing I see in bold capitals is, geeks love to fight. If you've ever seen a geek fight, you know that there's something wrong with that sentence.
Yeah, aside from the lack of measurable upper body strength in most geeks, and I say
maybe
most,
they don't look like physically, but certainly like debate wise,
okay, no, yeah. they try and troll, but I'll have you know, for all you trolls, I am an internet billy goat, and I will have you. so yeah, do I recommend it? If you're a geek and you want something different to read to the typical kind of sword and sorcery, science fiction, fantasy type, Ember in the Ashes type stuff, then yes, it's interesting up to a point, but take it with a pinch of salt and, you know, use your own common sense if you have any.
Sometimes I'm just trying to shake the image of you like bursting through someone's laptop screaming, Avit.
No, no. No, it wouldn't be Avit, it'd be Avit. Meh. Meh.
In the snow, you do have horns.
Well, this has kind of gone weird.
How are we
for time? Have we got much time left?
No, we have about a minute left. So we're pretty much done.
Is that just going to be filled with goat noises?
No. Right, left that open for me.
No, I did. Well, I think since we have...
I'll just stand in the corner chewing on a can now. Maybe I'll climb that wall and balance on that nail there like some weird mountain goat.
Well, since we have...
How did they do that? You just see them, you see these mountain goats on like an almost vertical face, and there's like a pebble, and they've got all four hooves on this tiny pebble, and look at you and go, what?
No. Half the time they look at you like, honestly, I don't know how I got here either. I don't know what's happening. I went out for a drink and I woke up here. I don't know what it is.
Is this like the goat version of being a student?
Yeah. See, I think I know the real answer, but I can't tell it to you until after the show.
It's actually more like a goat version of a stag do.
Okay, now I've got some weird kind of...
Okay,
things are getting weirder now.
I say we should end
a
it
A goat
there.
Going to a stag do.
Yeah. I reckon we should kind of end it there.
It's all going a bit Animal Farm here.
Yes,
and I don't mean the good one.
Yes. And
anyway.
And his fiance on a hen party.
No. Stop. There. you horrible, horrible, evil man.
I'm evil.
It's done.
Says
we're
you.
Done. It's over. The show is over. The
Says
lights
you.
Are going out. The microphones are turning off.
Right.
We will
anyway.
Never see the like of this again in our lifetime.
Anyway.
If we're lucky.
So...
I think
we have been literary loitering. Let's end it there. We've been literary loitering. We'll see you all again next week. I have been Rob.
I've been Owen.
And I've been Andrew.